Don't interrupt.
Are you sure you won't interrupt?
I know, that makes it sound like I'm going to interrupt. I really
well, you're already on the recording, so.
Oh.
Well.
Well.
Anyway. Hello, Friday Therapy listeners. It's been a while, hasn't it? About a year. Probably more. And a year before, or a year ago, it was a year since our last episode. We just were releasing once every year, about. We decided that the format that Friday Therapy wasn't really cutting it anymore. So we are going to move to a new podcast. I believe we're calling it The Dialectical Rats. So I will include a link to that in the description of this episode. I just wanted to make it a new podcast altogether because I know that some of you may have been listening with certain expectations and were enjoying certain types of content that we're making. And since we're going in a new direction with things, I don't want to be blowing up people's feeds without reason to. So I know that a lot of the listeners here are people that know us, our family and friends. So if you're one of those people, shout out to you and come see us on the Dialectical Rats. We have our 2024 music, year in music review over there. That's actually going to be after this announcement as well, but that's going to be our first episode that's under the new branding, despite the fact that in the episode we still call ourselves Friday Therapy. We're not going to talk about that. Just understand that we're Friday Therapy is defunct. This is going to be the last thing posted on here. If you want to see our new stuff, go over to the Dialectical Rats. The title change of the podcast reflects, like it says Friday Therapy, now Dialectical Rats. So you can just go over there. And Harry is now a full-time host of the show, as one might have expected. So give him a warm welcome in this episode. And yeah, I hope you enjoy the 2024 Year in Music review. Peace. All right, sweet. That looked really in sync with each other. So I think that we're good. So there are two people who have guest lists on today's show. They won't be present in the actual recording session, but they do have lists that can be read aloud. So Anna is one of them, so I was going to read Anna's. Do one of you guys want to read Kai's?
Where is Kai?
Who knows?
I'll do the honors if you want.
Here, I'll send you Kai's.
He has his commentary too, right?
Yes.
Are we gonna rapid fire them or
like our ones?
No.
You can do as much or as little explanation as you want. I'm gonna rapid fire Anna's because she didn't put any.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, right, just integrate them while, because we always do it like everyone does 10 and then 9 and so on.
Yeah. And Anna only has 5, so I'm going to start it at 5.
Okay.
Okay, I sent you the exact text that Kai sent me for reading purposes.
I'll integrate him in.
So, what order do you guys want to go in? It can be like, I can start, and then Harry and Kai, and then Logan.
Logan bringing up the rear.
I'm gonna have to be last, because I'm still creating.
You're making the list as you
go. Man, Harrisoning the list is crazy.
Okay.
God bless it, man. Okay. So I guess I'll begin then. And obviously, I'm actually gonna start with my honorable mentions. And then I'm gonna do 10.
and then we're gonna move on. And then you guys should follow suit with honorable mentions if you have them, and then go with 10. So, and when you're reading Kai's, do the same thing. Do his honorable mentions first, which I think are at the bottom, and then
naturally.
Okay. So, my honorable mentions. I want to preface this by saying that these records were really strong, and if they came out last year, they would be on my top 10 list. This was just a really strong year for music, at least in terms of me and my tastes. But yeah, honorable mention number one is Tracy Breaks with the record My Twee Monsters, and that one is the best hyperpop record to have come out this year. I also got The Help with LL, an electro clash album, which includes some hyperpop ideas, especially in the production. It's just a nice rock hyperpop blend. And then JPEG Mafia with I Lay Down My Life for You. JPEG's weakest album since All My Heroes Are Cornballs is still a great album. All right, and then starting my actual list, number 10, Adrian Lenker's Bright Future. The lead singer from Big Thief, Adrienne Lenker, releases a great folk album this year, exploring themes of suffering and love. What stands out, especially in this album, is the distorted twang put on the guitar in tracks like Fool, Sadness is a Gift, and Vampire Empire. Where this album falters is in some lackluster tracks with hollow production, such as An Evil, which stylistically makes sense for the theme of the album, but I can't help but feel bored listening to them. The thing here is that the three tracks that I mentioned as being standout are so good that their brightness outshines the dark spots on the record.
All right, yeah, I was not going to make my list, but I did give it a spin, and I did like it. So, yeah, I see where you're coming from. All right, I'll Kai's honorable mentions. The first is Plastic Death, Glass Beach. Probably my favorite song of the year, but it's the only good song. and then Vultures 2 by Y Dollar Sign. Just three fire emojis of commentary on that one. And then also King's Disease 3 by Nas.
Naturally.
Kai's number 10 is Nug Life 2024 by Nug Life. Reason, funny name.
I don't even know what Nug Life is.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with this one either. My number 10 is Fearless Movement by Kamasi Washington, which was like a jazz fusion album. Actually has quite an expansive feature list. Got Thundercat on there, got George Clinton, and Andre 3000 and his flute make an appearance on a song, Dream State, that I actually really like. But yeah, just a cool jazz album. There's a couple, like, I don't know, spoken word, like, kind of rap verses on here too, but a lot of it's more instrumental, and yeah, I don't like all that much modern jazz, but this one I think it taps into the classic feel, so it's got, yeah, good study music for me this year.
Yeah, regarding Kai's Nug Life, I think the only recollection I have of that one is when he just asked me, "Hey, you know Nug Life?" With no further elaboration.
Excellent. But, yeah.
Yeah. I do want to give one honorable mention real quick to Schoolboy Q's Blue Lips. Schoolboy is someone I have not necessarily been the biggest fan of in the past. I know that he has garnered a lot of respect and popularity through TDE, but I often felt like his standout stuff, particularly like Blank Face LP, just was a bit too lengthy and just a bit too samey as well. But I thought Blue Lips came through with some good standout cuts and the brevity was there as well, so thought it was a good effort from Q. My 10th spot's going to go to St. Vincent with All Born Screaming. This came out towards the beginning of the year, and like pretty much any St. Vincent release, just found it to be a pretty endearing combination of rock and neo-psych stuff. This was a mainstay for me studying in the spring semester. Kind of fell out of the rotation, but it's pulling up at number 10 for me.
Man, I sent that to you, Harry, and you said you didn't like it.
I just I remember, had to look it up. Apparently, I really didn't, because I didn't remember you sending it to me.
So forgetful that Harry's brain went alcohol mode while listening to it.
Beer for every meal.
That's going to be elite when we arrive in Madison. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and pivot on to my number 9. This one was Vampire Weekend's Only God Was Above Us. Vampire Weekend has been a mainstay in my listening since I was in middle school, so that's like 10 years, basically. And I really think that this album is their best one. So yeah, don't take that lightly, because I've been listening to them for 10 years. But this record feels like they bring back some of their iconic twangy sound that they had on their old records, their self-titled and Vampires in the City being what I'm referring to there. And this time they bring in some more harsh timbres, veering towards more hard rock on some of the tracks like Ice Cream Piano, but also being more subdued in later tracks like Mary Boone. But yeah, this album feels like a synthesis of the sound that I loved from Vampire Weekend when I was younger and the sound of rock that I really enjoy today, just bringing them both together.
Okay, Kai's number 9 is an album that I think will come up a lot later, which is Scrapyard by Quodeca, and he said it's interesting, but he doesn't like his voice, so I think that's why it's not that high up. My number 9 would be West Side Gun and DJ Drama's Still Praying. I thought this was a nice return to form for Gunn after some subpar records leading up to it, but I really liked the production on this. You know, the first two tracks on this are both skits, so or instrumental, so I thought he was really switching it up on my first listen, but we get back to the classic Gunn for the rest of the songs, and I don't know, I guess Beef Bar, which is first like real song, is probably my favorite, but Stove and the rest of the Griselda Boys have good verses on Still Praying, and there's not really any songs I really hate, so overall a solid effort, and hopefully Gunn can get back to giving us stuff like this.
Doesn't Hitler 8 open with back-to-back skits as well? I thought that was just like...
Well, Hitler 8-1 or Hitler 8-2?
I'm pretty sure Hitler 8-1 opens with back-to-back
skits. I can't wait
skits.
For Hitler 8-1-2. That's going to be electric.
Oh, yeah, they already dropped this one. I think it only has one skit to start, though.
Man, Hitler 8-3-1 is going to be crazy. That one is only skits.
They have one, or they might have no skits with that. Does that just go into Fly God Jr., or is there a skit beforehand? I think there might be one.
No, there's a track before Fly God Jr. And I think it was a pretty good one, actually.
Oh, so it really built you up to...
for the they lure you in with a good track and then hit you with the Fly God Jr., and then you want to leave, and then the rest of the tracks are pretty good.
That is an interesting strat for sure. Anyways, pulling up with the number 9 spot for me is going to be Makami, aka My Cummy, with hashtag Rich Ass Haitian. And this effort, although I don't believe it reached the highs of pray for Haiti. I think it was certainly a return to form in more of that Murakami release with more notoriety, just because it's readily available to be listened to on streaming platforms as opposed to being a cassette exclusive that only three people can get on his website for 77777 via crypto. But those records usually aren't that good, so I don't know who's buying those, but this was much better. Like the, you know, with Mach, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get some clever bars and gritty beats and stuff like that. Though this album kind of, instead of being with a lot of Mach records, they heavily feature one producer. This was kind of the greatest hits of basically all of the best producers Mach has worked with throughout his career, and it resulted in some gold. The track Copy Cold with Black Thought was an absolute standout for me, so I would definitely recommend anyone check this out, especially if they like to come.
If they'd like to what?
If they'd like to come for my coming. Oh,
my coming. That's exactly my Goonie, I think, he's rebranding here soon, too. All right, yeah, I'll go ahead and go to number 8 here. My number 8 was Tweakypedia's album, For the Rest of Your Life. In a year with 2 Paranoid releases, I think being a better shoegaze album than both of them is very impressive. Tweakypedia is a Brazil-based solo act. Mentioning Paranoid earlier, from the next part of the Dream by Paranoid feels like a very strong influence on this record. What sets the album apart from other shoegaze records that came out this year were its catchy melodies and just like very earworm chord progressions, which are present on every single track in this record. One common critique I've seen is that the artists have a sort of like amateurish sound to their vocals, but I actually feel like that helps add to the emotional authenticity of the record. So, number 8.
Alright, Kai's number 8 is Blue Lips by Schoolboy Q, which Logan gave a much better analysis of, because what we get from this, from him, is don't even remember this one, low key, with low key spelled wrong without a W. But...
So you're giving that the L for the review?
Yeah, given he dropped the W, so it's obviously he doesn't even think it was worthy of a W.
But yeah, my number 8 would be Chromacopia by Tyler the Creator. I don't know, honestly, well, I'd say Tyler, a lot fairly similar to sound to Call Me If You Get Lost in my mind. I would say, honestly, one of my least favorite Tyler albums, but I think Tyler is such a quality artist that this was still a very enjoyable listen, and I wasn't that disappointed in it. It just didn't really wow me. I guess probably Ratata was my favorite off of it. But Noid was pretty fun too. Yeah, overall solid effort from Tyler, but I guess I'm holding out for something better in the future.
Yeah, Tyler actually got banned from my list permanently. He's no longer allowed on any of my lists going forward due to plagiarism of my Aspeed 001 on his track Balloon that came out this year. So, unfortunately, he's no longer allowed on any of my lists.
Yeah. That about sums it up. Anyways, for my number 8, we are actually coming out of the mean streets of Brazil with Sam LRC's A Lonely Sinner. This also came out towards the beginning of the year, but It's just a really good progressive rock album. Some shoegaze influence in there as well. The only thing that knocks it for me is I feel like, especially towards the back half, part of it can drag, but the highs on this record are absolutely undeniable. Tracks like Sinner and Storage, they really just build up into something beautiful, and this is a great record to put on when you're driving and just kind of take everything in. And I love listening to this album, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I listened to that one after my surgery, but I had too many opiates to remember it. So the only reason why I know that I listened to it is because it's on my saved albums on Spotify. So, yeah, that one was... I really enjoyed that one.
Maybe too much. Right.
Probably. Probably. All right, so next up I have a record which came out at the end of the year, relatively recently, Smiling Broadly's album, For a Moment I Saw Myself as Inexorably Happy. Inexorably Happy? I don't know how to pronounce that word. I've never heard it said aloud before. That's why I've only read it.
I think you're second one.
Inexorably? Yeah, that would make sense to me. Anyway, it was a new discovery for me this year, Smiling Broadly, and it's also their first full-length LP that they put out. And if I had to shoehorn them into a single genre, it would be like a noise pop sort of thing. What makes this artist especially unique is her use of the Eleanor Forte, which is the name of a vocoder, to create inhuman and sort of robotic vocals. This album has a very diverse palette of taste that it's impossible to get bored listening to it. Smiling Broadly includes Midwest emo influences, Indietronica influences, while also holding true to her typical noise pop sound. Once again, this was a late in the year discovery for me, and it has been getting nonstop spin since I found it, and it delivers a nonstop onslaught of delicious chromatic noise, which doesn't ever not bring a smile to my face.
All right, yeah, moving on to number 7 around here. Kai put forward Vultures 1 by Yay Dollar Sign with the note that there was two pretty good songs and the rest were bad, but that those two, which he didn't specify which, must have been good enough to get it onto his list.
And how many songs are on the record? Like 20 something?
24 or something. For,
112 was amazing.
For my own, number 7, I have You Only Die Once by Freddie Gibbs. Gibbs is definitely, you know, one of my favorite rappers ever, so I always, go into his projects excited. I would say this one was a bit better, than his previous one, sold separately, but still pretty comparable. You know, it's like, yeah, I don't know if we're ever going to get Pinata Gibbs back, but so be it. This is still a fun record start to finish. Even the trappy Gibbs that I've not loved so much in the past is not here that much, and those songs
he hasn't been same since the Spready incident.
Aren't that bad either. So, this is another fun one. It was good to see Freddie back on the scene, both on social media and in the studio. So yeah, check it out.
When's Montana dropping?
Montana. 2025, I got a good feeling.
2025. All right, for my 7th spot, I'm going with Boldy James and Nicholas Craven with Penalty of Leadership. I don't really know why that's the title, but this is essentially Boldy recounting the story and the aftermath of his car crash from, it's probably been a year and a half ago at this point, that left him temporarily paralyzed from the neck down. This record came out, I think, the very first week of 2024, and there really isn't that much to it. You know what you're going to get with Boldy and Craven, but just from a quality standpoint, this is Boldy's best writing effort. He's focused and more personal. other than manager on Mick Nichols, this is definitely his most topical release. And this is my favorite batch of Craven beats, period. So he's incorporating more drums as well, which helps things kind of flow along. So I'm not sure why this didn't get much recognition, but this, other than Major on Mick Nichols, I would say this is far and away the best Boldy release.
Manager on Mick Nichols. Yeah, okay. Moving on to number six, I had Charlie XCX's Brat here. And I really appreciate this album. I like what Charlie XCX did, bringing the electropop sound that defined the 2000s and early 2010s back into the zeitgeist. With production from longtime collaborator A.G. Cook, also bringing in Hudson Mohawk, this album is dense, blocky, and energetic. Songs like Club Classics, 365, and especially Von Dutch are sure to get the club going. Even more emotional tracks like So I and I Think About It All the Time are both well done and cohesive with the theme of the record. The album's biggest flaw, in my opinion, was the fervent cult following it found on social media, as well as its involvement in politics. However, this album is Charlie XCX's best and will likely be a genre-defining moment for pop moving forward.
Yeah, that's a good breakdown. Spoiler, I'll have my own thoughts on that one coming up. But before that, we have Kai's number six, Across the Tracks, Boldy James, Conductor Williams. Boldy very skinny. thank you, Kai. for my own number six, I have I Lay Down My Life for You by JPEG Mafia. Peggy, another one of my favorite rappers who, yeah, any release I look forward to. This one, I remember when it first dropped, I was super high on it. I think I texted Logan, this might be my favorite Peggy solo album. I don't know if I would still vibe with that take, but I still really like this. You know, I liked some of the new styles he was trying out here. The standouts for me would probably be JPEG Ultra and Either On and Off the Drugs. You know, him and Curry are always so fun together, and they're supposed to be a collab tape, right? But I think the writers forgot about that plot, but he's got that song. And then the more, I don't know, traditional production of Either On and Off the Drugs and Peggy just kind of, you know, giving us 16, I'm always down for. So yeah, another strong effort by Peggy, and we had fun at the concert too.
Yeah, I think that collab tape, Club Black Dust, I think that one's locked in the vault with Montana. But for my number six, I have Tyler, the Creator with Chromacopia. Again, this is a pretty similar formula to his previous record, Call Me If You Get Lost, but I don't really know what it is. For me, this release just clicked with me more. One of the weak points of Call Me If You Get Lost, in my opinion, was the, I think it was an 11-minute track, Wilshire, which just dragged and was pretty boring, and basically they replaced Wilshire with better music instead this time. Like Him was a huge standout for me. That's probably my favorite Tyler track since Igor. So a lot of good stuff here in general, and yeah, just liked it a lot.
Yeah, despite not making the list for me, I do say I appreciated Like Him a lot on my listen of Chromacopia. But, you know, this year was just too strong, and Tyler was too plagiaristic for him to make the list this year. So, number five, and I'm going to start with my beautiful girlfriend Anna's number five, Big Ideas by Remy Wolf. Rate Your Music has this listed as a dance pop rock album, and the top review on Rate Your Music says, flaws and all, Big Ideas makes its voice known. I'm not going to read the whole paragraph. I'm just going to read that.
We're not outsourcing to those idiots.
Iconic Gooners on Write Your Music. Thank you for the free. Oh, wait, I'll read the username. It was TitanSaurus28 who wrote that. Shout out.
Of course.
Anime PFP or no?
It is actually a Team Fortress 2 profile picture. So even worse.
Yeah.
So my number five was Magdalena Bay's Imaginal Disc. And this was by far my most anticipated album to come out this year. And I think it delivered well on that promise. Magdalena, in my opinion, does synth pop better than anyone else out right now. Their sound somehow feeling both futuristic and nostalgic at the same time. I absolutely adore those groovy tracks which make me want to get out of my seat and dance, like Killing Time and Death and Romance. I also love those bassy crush sounds on tracks like my personal favorite, That's My Floor, as well as Vampire in the Corner. And through this entire album, are Mika Tenenbaum's lovely vocals underscoring and enhancing every track. Matt and Mika of Magdalena Bay do a good job of delivering a fun, energetic album that perfectly encapsulates their style.
Some say that it is a marked improvement on Lil Boat's attempt on one track, though.
Yeah, I think they're about equal in my opinion. But I did Lil Boat did get a shout last year in my list with the production from Magdalena Bay, so. Their formula works, let's just say that.
Yeah, more astute analysis, y'all. I'll also have some follow-ups on this one. But, let's see, for Kai's number five, Acelero by Crisen Dub Zio. Barry Sigma Brazilian Funk, parentheses Mango, parentheses Those Who Know, Dying Emoji. Do any of y'all know?
Yeah, that's a brain rot.
Okay.
Right there.
That
just yeah, straight up.
Above brain my rot. Pay grade is brain rotted as some allege me to be, but.
Hey, you have your own special genre of brain rot, like the Hegelian brain rot, you know. Dialectical brain rot.
Yeah. I'll take that one on the chin. But I'll also take for my number five spot, Jordy Greep's The New Sound. I will say I was saddened when the news of when the Black Midi news breakup news hit me. As they were one of my favorite, you know, newer rock.
Where were you? Where were you when they
I fell to my knees in this hall. But and I was somewhat concerned with Greep going out on his own. I know his voice can be a polarizing topic of debate, and I really didn't know how much input he had on the instrumentation of Black Midi, which is definitely the strongest part. But he knocked it out of the park in my mind with his solo debut. It was a hodgepodge of a lot of different sounds, but it's almost like kind of like a Frank Zappa-esque album. There's like some bossa nova in there, a lot of jazz rock, but a very fun listen throughout. A very, libido inspired, I guess, on some of the tracks, especially the opening one with a lot of bars about his.
Yeah, he was feeling like Priapus. Yeah. If those who know. Mango. Skull emoji.
Yes, the strengths of certain areas of his body were definitely outlined there, but I think Holy Holy, which was the lead single to this, was the standout, a good pick for the lead single. You know, it's 6 minute long, but just lots of different movements, just great track, great album, so... Despite losing Black Midi, we were still getting some standout records from at least their former frontman.
So even though he got sent to horny jail, luckily the Greeper's voice was not nearly as grating as Quadeca's, right?
Yeah, apparently.
Apparently. Well, no, because Greep didn't even make Kai's list. Spoilers, by the way. But it was not Greek-tastic enough.
What's the dude's name who might have Aiden?
Mia's boyfriend Aiden is a certified Greeper.
He got and stamp, also a certified
injury reserve listener too. Interestingly enough,
he don't miss. Mm.
He kind of his vibe is kind of like Logan with 0% autism.
How does this fit in with Kai's assessment of me that I'm the most autistic person he's ever seen? Where does that lead?
I don't
us
know because my assessment of Aiden is like he's like you without autism, and then Kai's assessment of you is that you're the most autistic person ever. So I think there
saying.
Needs to
what
be.
That leave us
I think we need one more point of we need one more equation and then we get everything set.
Yeah, at all.
Oh, like the Bernoulli equation.
Yeah, or like the it's more like Gibbs phase rule, which I think it's came Freddy. Out this year. Freddy.
Well, that's good to have that cleared up. Moving in to the fifth slot for me, we have Kendrick Lamar Duckworth with Ooh. GNX. This was one I actually hated on first listen, but just decided to keep listening to it, and it was certainly a grower. This was pretty much what I didn't know I wanted with Mr. Morale. Just a straightforward love letter to the West Coast. No tap dancing. No Kodak Black. No filler tracks. Just short and sweet. And with a ton of standout cuts, squabble ups, and earworm. Both of the SZA tracks are really good. Reincarnated is definitely a standout in Kendrick's discography. Definitely a return to form and a welcome one from Mr. Duckworth. And Soundwave, of course, delivers as always. So I also like the features of these pretty esoteric West Coast LA rappers. Most of them delivered as well. So other than the title track, pretty much loved everyone here.
Yeah, I also listened to that one. It did not make my list, unfortunately, because I just listened to it one time. I did think it was a marketed improvement on Mr. Morale, his previous Too Long album. Yeah, that's really my thoughts on that matter. Moving on to number four, and I'm going to start with My Beautiful Girlfriend Anna's number four, which was Aftercare by Nessa Barrett. Rate Your Music describes this album as being alt-pop. And first review by Cuckoo Bunny with a plush profile picture has the title of their review being overproduced and almost inauthentic. So there you have it, folks. All right. But yeah, it seems pretty in keeping with Anna's enjoyment of influencers making pop music. She was a fan of Addison Rae's first foray into pop. And to be honest, I will say I did like Addison Rae's remix of Von Dutch. I didn't like it more than the original, but I liked it. So that's my in defense of, but my number four now. I had Quadeca's Scrapyard here. This mixtape from former YouTube rapper Quadeca was one that slowly but surely grew on me, ending the year as my most listened to album of the year, partially assisted by its early in the year release. In this mixtape, each track sort of exists on its own, but having a distinct style and sound, yet zooming out to look at the record as a whole, it still feels cohesive. The first two tracks go from Dust Cutter, which is a track with haunting, ghastly production that almost feels miasmic, directly into A La Carte, which has a casual bedroom pop production, and it still feels cohesive going between those two tracks. And those are just the first two tracks. Tracks like Way Too Many Friends and Guide Dog were standouts to me. Way Too Many Friends ended my year as my number one most listened to song. And the Way Too Many Friends is sort of an introspective look on... while Guide Dog is more of an amorous feeling track. one glaring dark spot in this record is you tried that thing where you're human, which feels a bit heavy-handed for the idea it's trying to explore. Quedeca's mixtape is explorative, poignant, and dynamic, making for a wonderful collection of tracks that don't get old, while also creating cohesive underlying sound, which I hope he chooses to consider in future products.
Yeah, well, Jan, we're really going to have a nice dovetail here, but before that, and apologies to any of our Japanese listeners, but Kai has number four, Maho Gakko Hakushi Hasegawa. He said, IDK, I listened to it at the gym a couple times.
15 sets of curl.
Apparently,
yeah. I think we settled this because it was Aiden that was the one who saw him. It was 20 sets of flies.
20 sets of flies?
And that's apparently, good for him. Yeah, that record was enough to get him through that arduous task. my number four.
By the grace of God.
Yeah. My number four is also Quadeca's Scrapyard. And I share a lot of my standout tracks with Jan. The first two, Dust Cutter into A La Carte, is an incredible start. I think A La Carte is probably my favorite on the whole. I don't know. Yeah, I could see someone like not liking his vocals there, but I think he really makes it work. The production on this throughout is excellent, and you know the lyrics and just like the topics of the song is nothing crazy, but he makes it work. And Texas Blue, I think another standout. I think I remember texting Logan that and saying, where were you when music peaked, or something to that effect, off my first listen. But yes, I also, it was quite going through Quedeca's Rate Your Music page, he has to have one of the biggest like come ups ever, because his initial YouTube raps might be in like the ones, and this one is in the fours. I'm gonna make.
Yeah, just wait. Ed Sheeran is gonna double that. he's gonna go to seven. One, you know?
So yeah, and I've heard Quedeca say that this is just, you know, like it's Scrapyard, right? It's not even a coherent album or project. So I definitely look forward to you know, the actual album that he says he has coming. So, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of different takes on influencers making music, huh? But for my number four...
It's only good if you're Quedeca, yeah. Apparently.
Right. But for my number four, I'm going with Magdalena Bay, Imaginal Disc. Jan definitely gave a much more astute summary than anything I could put together on the fly right now. But... just in general, thought this was contained some of Mika's best vocal performances in general, and again, just loved this album. Pretty much every track was an earworm, and it's just great stuff.
Okay, moving on to number three. I'm gonna start with Anna's number three, which was Brat. And in keeping with the tradition of what I've been doing for her reviews, I'm just going to read the first right music review. This one is from Aldwin Stibora with a Cardi black and white picture, profile picture. Rates it 3.5 stars, saying, great album, but I prefer the remixes album.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, there you go. My number three was Lustsick Puppies' Carousel from Hell. This record is just under 20 minutes of pure, unadulterated energy. I don't really know what genre to call this one. Rate Your Music says it's digital hardcore. I'm going to take their word for it. But it's fantastic. This record does something that I wish many other records would do, and that is be short. Lustsick Puppy knew they had 20 minutes of bangers and didn't try and pad it out to 35. For a standard album length. This album is manic and evocative and most certainly sexual. It feels like Lustsick Puppy has had this sixth sense to know exactly how long to stay on one idea before moving on to the next one, maintaining a breakneck pace throughout the record. Lost Lake Puppy creates a musical roller coaster that's actually a haunted house, but it's actually secretly a brothel, which is actually secretly a satanic cult. Once you get on, you don't want to get off.
Wow, that's actually a lot of things.
Okay. It's actually good.
Yeah. For Kai's number three, I guess I have some divergence with us, but he has a Chromacopia by Tyler, the Creator, which he said was pretty good and kind of sounds like Igor, which is interesting because Logan and I compared it to Call Me If You Get Lost. But
I think that's the better comp, that Call Me If You Get Lost one.
If only we could, yeah, get into that mind and see where he saw the similarities. But alas, maybe next year. For my own number three, oh, and I should say this is basically a tie with number two, but I'll go into my tiebreaker rationale later. But I'm actually aligned with Anna here, and I have Brat by Charlie XCX. I don't know. I remember y'all two were like talking about this album in our group chat when it came out, and I was like initially hesitant for whatever reason, but gave it a try and never looked back. Yeah, similar to a lot of stuff you said, yeah, I mean, the production on this is, you know, so fun, just like, yeah, electronic, like, you know, dance club music at its best. But I also love Charlie's sort of, yeah, braggadocious lyrics on here. You know, you kind of have the fun that you have with those and a lot of rap songs you get on here in a completely different genre. I guess Von Dutch, I think, was definitely the strongest to me, but 360 and 365 were probably my second and third most played. But yes, really good, really cool to see Charlie back in the spotlight after, you know, just one of the biggest pop stars like 10 years ago and is again. It is unfortunate that it couldn't get a certain political campaign over the line, but you know,
yeah, Jeb.
Keep pushing that boulder up the hill.
Yeah, Jeb did unfortunately lose the election to those who are not in America. Yeah, unfortunately, no matter what Charlie XCX tried, she couldn't do it. And she's not even an American citizen, so she couldn't even vote.
Ask Heiko how that turned out then.
I'm pretty sure he voted for Jeb too, so.
Oh, so just like everyone else.
Yeah, and it must be rigged because he still lost.
Yeah.
It must be
rigged. Deep state. The deep state. Yeah. Rick and Mortar.
I think some would say, Smudge, that your initial moment of hesitation was actually a harbinger of what was to come later in terms of the whole Brat cultural movement. So I'd say you exercised some solid judgment there. Unfortunately, I am also going to fall in line and nominate another album that is certainly sexual for the third spot, which of course is Brat. And I actually initially wanted to leave this album off of my list entirely, but then I realized that this was definitely one of those instances where I had to separate the art not from the artist, but rather the hullabaloo that surrounded it. And certainly going to see Charlie and Troye Sivan live, Charlie put on a great show, but ultimately I came away from that night definitely more negative.
The same Umar sort of idea.
Yeah, I did feel a certain solidarity with Umar that night, and I think I'll always cherish that feeling. So, not much that has. Yeah, I'll leave the rest unsaid on that one.
We're on number two, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, number two. Starting with Lovely Anna's number two, it was Imaginal Disc. In keeping with the tradition of looking at Rate Your Music reviews, we have Aleph Nullification, who has a profile picture of a chair in a room, giving it no stars at all, not even rated. And their first sentence is, an extremely well-crafted album. There you have it, folks.
So true.
So my number two, I have it listed as Best Dynamic Shroud with Everything Is Easy. But in reality, it's kind of a stand-in for three albums, all by Death's Dynamic Shroud. But anyway, Dayton-based trio Death's Dynamic Shroud was on a tear this year, releasing 10 albums in 2024. What is crazy about that statistic is that they were all really good and explorative, each one cornering a different genre. This album was, I think, the best of their output this year, being Everything Is Easy. But this also stands for all the albums they released this year. For those of you who do not know about Death's Dynamic Shroud, it is a musical trio composed of Keith Rankin, James Webster, and Tech Honors. They have an absurd output, but they kind of cheat a little bit because not all of them are collaborating on every single record. In fact, the last album where all three of them were collaborating together was in 2022. But the album that I listed here, Everything Is Easy, was actually a solo project by Tech Honors, who released three really good records this year, the first of which was American Candy, which was a vaporwave Plunderphonics record, which puts the classic DDS sound on top of chopped up tracks from recent popular culture, such as Driver's License by Olivia Rodrigo. The second album he released was Before the Killing Spree, a post-industrial rock album that feels inspired in part by Nine Inch Nails. Finally, he released this one, Everything Is Easy, a noise pop slash rock album, which provides critiques of Western internet culture. The thing is, if I didn't lump DDS's music into one entry, all three of those records would be on my top 10 list. Bringing back the focus to Everything Is Easy, the record is a super energetic and addictive. It balances these portraits of internet culture, like on Piss and Moan and Late Stage Capitalism, on the titular track Everything Is Easy, while also making the sound of the album feel fun and bouncy, while also staying true to that Tech Honor sound that he delivers to DDS albums of the past that I've enjoyed. Overall, this album is the crowning achievement in what was an amazing year for Tech Honors and Death's Dynamic Shroud as a whole.
All right, let's see. Kai, in a running theme here, had his number two of Magdalena Bay's Imaginal Disc. I genuinely like this one. Very fun. So about the same quality as that Rate Your Music comment, so...
Well, there was a bigger review on the Rate Your Music comment. I just read the first sentence.
My own number two was Kendrick Lamar's GNX, and as I said, I guess... You know, this and Brat were both like 9 out of 10s in my head, but the tiebreaker was just, I don't know. Kendrick's my favorite artist, so I decided I'd lean towards him. But yeah, for a, you know, surprise album drop, I remember I just, you know, walked out of class and got a text from my brother saying, "Yo, Kendrick dropped," or something to that effect, and just, yeah, immediately threw this one on. But yeah, a very different than any other Kendrick project. I felt like there wasn't that much of a overarching theme here, and yet of course he still delivered on the bouncy West Coast production. Let's see, the standouts for me were Walked Out Murals on that spooky production, very fitting for everyone he was calling out. Luther, I'm softer than some on this podcast on Kendrick's, you know, R&B singing songs, but this one I felt he got exactly right. This is one of his best. And then yeah, Squabble Up and Reincarnated, also a huge standout. So very grateful we got this in a very appropriate crown jewel in Kendrick's incredible 2024.
Yeah, absolutely. The R&B tracks that had fallen short previously, he tied that up for sure. But for my number two, I have JPEG Mafia, I Lay Down My Life For You. Again, with Peggy, it's a pretty similar formula for a full-length LP release, and the thing that I really appreciated about this one was again, he kind of delved more into that personal side and then also explored more other types of sounds, whether it was the more aggressive industrial rock sound that he had kind of played with in the past. This was definitely brought more to front and center and expanded upon here. Love to hear that. And also more feature verses than in previous albums, and they delivered, whether it was Vince Staples or Denzel or Buzzy Lee, all of their appearances were highlights here. Just in general, thought this album front to back had no real weak spots, and again, for Peggy, it's all quality, so gonna leave it at that.
Wonderful. Moving on to number one of the year. You guys got that? Yeah, okay.
I'm with you.
All right, sweet. I'm going to start with my lovely girlfriend Anna's number one album of the year, and that was, bear with me here, Orquedas Parte 2. I'm guessing it translates to orchids, but I don't speak Spanish, so I wouldn't know. I'm here on Rate Your Music looking at this album, and I see it is listed as contemporary R&B and Latin pop. And in keeping with tradition, Time Tobe on Rate Your Music, who has no profile picture, rates it 2.5 stars, saying, "I didn't know this was a reggaeton adjacent record before listening to it, so that's my fault." All right, so yeah, that's Anna's number one, Kali Uchis. All right, and then my number one of the year, Porter Robinson's Smile. For those of you who know me, you probably can understand why this album appeals to me so much. It's just, it has this very stereotypical sound that one would, I think, associate with me and the music that I listen to. Porter Robinson was actually new to me this year, and he didn't disappoint at all. Despite its relatively late release in the year, Knock Yourself Out managed to be in my top 5 most listened to tracks of the year. This album is just so much fun, and it's so nostalgic too. It synthesizes the sounds that define the mid-2010s with this bouncy, electronic, twinkly production that Porter is exploring here. Looking to his previous record with Nurture, which was a dream pop, indie-tronica sort of feel, this stylistic shift feels out of left field, but it's just so well done. It has high-energy tracks like Cheerleader and Russian Roulette at the top half of the record and Mona Lisa towards the back, with a feature from the Frost Children, who Danny Brown actually collabed with this year, as well as Haru. So they've been eating. Frost Children have been up this year. Porter explores more poetic and sensory themes on his track Year of the Cup, where he explores his relationship to the music that he makes, which is an overarching theme in this record. Overall, this album balances reflective lyrics well with fun, upbeat production, which shows Porter embracing his music as well as the concept of cliche in music as a whole.
Good pick. All right, and I kind of need to get into character here, but Kai's, also unsurprisingly, if you know him, number one was I Lay Down My Life For You from JPEG Mafia, which... Kai's performance at that concert was high up on my list of moments this year too. Just as an added note, but his note here is JPEG. I mean, where do I even begin? He's my everything. I listened to this on repeat since it came out. Very sonically pleasing.
Cantano got to him.
So, yes, thank you, Kai, and thank you, Peggy. For my own number one, it is one that has come up a lot already, but it is Magdalena Bay's Imaginal Disc. I don't know, I think I got lucky and just like happened to check Rate Your Music right when this came out, and it was already shooting up the charts, so I figured I'd check it out. I had not heard their first album, like, y'all had, but yeah, just absolutely blown away by this. I don't think there's a weakness throughout. I mean, it's 14 songs, which is saying something. Yeah, the synthy Production just really does it for me as someone who really likes synth pop, synth rock, and the songwriting is great. I said She Looked Like Me, the opener, is particularly strong in this regard. And I will say, I think, you know, thinking about the best albums of the 2020s so far, I thought Black Country, New Roads, Anthem Up There would go unchallenged for a while, and I think it still is my number one, but this is right up there with it. Like, I just, yeah, love this album so much. Check it out. You will not be disappointed.
I will.
Yeah, and then that leaves my number one to be Quiteca's Scrapyard. Again, going to echo a lot of what Jan said. Way Too Many Friends was also my most listened to track of the year. But, I mean, this thing just genre shifts back and forth like nothing else I've heard in kind of this hip-hop sphere in quite a long time. I mean, it starts off with, you know, the cloud rap type vibes of Dust Cutter, and it goes into emo rap, and then more like progressive stuff, and the track You Don't Know Me Like That kind of stood out as essentially like a futuristic version of like what maybe like Brockhampton could have sounded like had they stayed together 10 years down the line, and it incorporated, you know, dance breakdown stuff like that. I love that track a lot. Guess Who is kind of like a glitch hop industrial in your face banger that got a lot of spin for me. Again, I would say You Tried That Thing Where You're Human was the lone disappointing spot on the record, but it picks up quickly thereafter. Guide Dog is just like a straight singer-songwriter track that Quiteca pulls off remarkably well, and then Texas Blue, as Harry put so eloquently, is certainly one of my top tracks of the year. So I think this is the first list we've done where I did not have Peggy at the top honors, and I think this is certainly worthy.
Well, in a year that he released, yeah.
Yeah, certainly a worthy project to usurp the Pegster.
So here you have honored Denzel Curry, Peggy, and Quiteca. Those are your three top albums. You did the Melt in 2022, because that was our first year. And then last year it was Peg.
Oh, so...
And then this year it's Quad. Eka.
Did Denzel release anything last year?
No. I don't think. No, he didn't. He released this year.
Yeah. Well, twice, but it was the same album. It was like
like Charlie XCX.
Yeah.
But her album was like good enough to make my list. before we wrap up our list, I would like to give a special shout out to Violet Pony for making two good albums this year. One was a like sort of dubstep sound, and the other one was a weirdly amazing like alternative rock album out of nowhere. But shout out, it's really good music, especially for being made by a pony. So
yeah, and I said this last year, it didn't happen, but it is this year. Ozzo episode will happen, mark my words.
Okay, well, maybe not, but an episode around the time when Ozzo is happening might occur. Where the Ozzo might get a brief mention in said episode.
Yeah, sure.
I feel like we should just do a straight Auckland preview, but after the tournament already happened.
Yeah, Auckland preview, and then we go through and we just say that Novak Djokovic is going to win doubles. And that's all we say. It's a 2-second long podcast. Yeah, so you guys have that to look forward to. But yeah, this was Jan Behrens, Logan Hubbard, and Harry Hewen from Friday Therapy Podcast, if that's what we're still calling it, signing off. Peace out.